You have WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. President Biden and leaders from 13 other nations have announced a framework agreement that tackles several trade-related issues. CBS's Linda Kenyon has the latest.
The president made the announcement at the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, or APEC, summit in San Francisco.
We've concluded an agreement to accelerate the clean energy transition in the Indo-Pacific region, including by enabling greater U.S. and private sector investment in clean energy innovation and infrastructure in our partner countries.
The framework agreement also includes issues like supply chain challenges and the impact of artificial intelligence. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, Washington.
A federal judge declares a mistrial after the jury deadlocks over ex-Louisville officer Brett Hankison, who was involved in the deadly Breonna Taylor raid. CBS's Roxana Saberi reports.
Hankison was accused of firing 10 bullets blindly through Taylor's window and door. He didn't fire the bullet that killed Taylor, but his gunfire pierced a neighboring apartment where a family slept.
A retrial will be up to federal prosecutors. Without access to fuel as they try to help Palestinians stuck in war-torn Gaza, the head of the UN Palestinian Refugee Agency says they're in a bind. Felipe Lazzarini tells reporters,
I do believe that it is outrageous that humanitarian agencies are reduced to begging for fuel and forced after that to decide who we will assist or not assist when you have such a large population in a situation of life-saving.
After a blistering report from the House Ethics Committee on Congressman George Santos, the Republican says he will not seek re-election next year. But GOP Congressman Mike Lawler responds,
he needs to resign. He is unfit to serve as a member of Congress. His conduct was not only unethical and unbecoming and embarrassing, it is criminal.
The committee says there's clear evidence that Santos blatantly stole from his campaign and deceived donors and has referred its findings to federal prosecutors. A guilty verdict in Texas in the case of a murdered pro-cyclist, reporter Chris Fox.
It took the Travis County jury just over 2 hours to deliberate.
We, the jury, found the defendant, Caitlin Armstrong, guilty of the offense of murder.
They concluded 35-year-old yoga instructor Caitlin Armstrong fatally shot cyclist Anna Maria Mo Wilson as a result of a deadly love triangle back in May 2022. Among the evidence, a gun found in Armstrong's home. Susan Parmalo of the U.S. Marshals Service.
The shell casings at the murder scene were connected to that weapon.
Armstrong could get up to 99 years in prison. Chris Fox for CBS News, Austin.
This is CBS News.
You don't need a job platform, you need a hiring partner. Indeed lets you schedule and conduct virtual interviews all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credits.
The 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is here and ready to help. Anyone can call or text 988 or chat via 988wisconsin.org to get connected to a trained Lifeline counselor. Trained counselors are here to support anyone experiencing a suicidal, mental health, or substance use crisis. You can also contact 988 if you are concerned about someone. 988 is confidential and free to all Wisconsin residents. 988, 24/7. Call, text, chat. Here to support you. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
Translated into about 60,000 workers, potential workers, that weren't in the workforce because of that.
Dennis Winters is the chief economist for the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development. Scientists at the University of Wisconsin in Madison find the donated brains of men who were veterans in World War II, the Korean War, and the Vietnam War were 26% times more likely to show signs of Alzheimer's disease than men who did not serve in the military. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
The Badgers basketball team looking for a spark. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Wisconsin men's basketball team right now is 1-2 after losing to number 9th-ranked Tennessee, then on the road at Providence. On Friday night, they'll host Robert Morris out of Pennsylvania. It's a home game for the Badgers, tip-off time 6 p.m. at the Kohl's Center. Baseball, the Brewers introducing Pat Murphy as the 20th manager in franchise history.
Murph, 4 decades in this game, and you're sitting in front of a placard that says manager. Can you just kind of put into words what that means to you to be a major league manager?
You're asking about my feelings, Adam?
I am asking about your feelings, yes, sir.
You know how I feel about that. I mean, it's an honor. It really is an honor. I understand how coveted these jobs are, and I've had my eyes wide open for the last 8 years here, and it's a great challenge.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Wind advisory continues this evening for gusts 30 to 40 miles an hour. The wind will die down tonight, a clearing sky, a low in the upper 20s. Sunshine cooler in mid-40s tomorrow, but back in the low 50s with sunshine for this weekend, much less wind. Right now it's 48.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. From Liney Lodge and Carson Park, the entire Chippewa Valley is tapping in to the station talking about your hometown and all of Wisconsin. 93.5, The Tap.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So this week, there was a conference by the UN on taxation. Also talking about their sustainable development goals. And our good friend Morris Pearl was there to participate, to testify, to rub elbows with the folks who are making the choices, the decisions, and the agenda. So that's why I've asked our good friend Morris Pearl to come share some thoughts on the conference on taxes. You know Morris is the chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires, patrioticmillionaires.org, the website. Morris, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, you're welcome, Rick. Great to be on your show.
So, you know, walk me through what are we talking about here? What happened during the big taxation talk?
Yeah, I mean, I only wish the people at this meeting were the ones who actually make decisions about policies, but mostly it's, you know, the deputy ambassadors from all these different countries talking about how if they just had, you know, the people just paid their taxes and they'd be so much better off. We heard the president of Colombia, who's actually a economics expert, saying most taxes, like three quarters, the people who pay the taxes are the same people who get the benefits. It's like you get benefits when you're going to school, and then when you retire, and in the middle when you're working, you pay in. And about three quarters of it is like that. And one quarter is like taxing the rich and benefiting the poor. But mostly, the people who pay the most are the same people who get the most benefits. So we heard from her. Joseph Stiglitz, the famous author, was there. He was telling us that even when the smaller countries try to invest in green technology, most of the money ends up going to the rich people in the rich countries for patent royalties and fees and usage, because green technology like solar cells are very capital intensive. You have to pay a lot of money to build them, and then you make the savings over the course of years, and it's tough. You know, we had a professor from Yale Law who had been in the Treasury Department supervising the Internal Revenue Service until recently, and she was telling us that there's like 12% people that just don't pay their taxes. And that's what they're trying to do now at the Internal Revenue Service, finally. You've seen the thing in the news about Microsoft.
Yeah.
The IRS sent them a bill for $28 billion. And that's basically about the same thing that I've been talking about for a long time, where companies take their intellectual property and move it to some other country. What Microsoft was doing for years, when you had to get a CD to install Windows or Office, they manufactured the CDs offshore, and they claim that's where all the money is made, in the manufacturing facility. And basically, the Internal Revenue Service is trying to claim, the people of the United States are trying to claim, I should say, that that's just a sham. And the money is really made in the United States, where you design the software and create the software, not where you physically manufacture the plastic boxes and put the disks in them.
And where it's sold. I mean, it's where your profit comes from. The consumers are here.
Yeah, most of the money is made in the United States. Clearly. There are a lot of people who want big companies, these multinationals, to add up like all the money they make And so you have to pay a percentage of that in taxes. And then you have to pay some to each country depending on where your customers are, where you make your money. And in some cases, that'll actually help the big countries like the United States. But it will help the smaller countries a little bit too, because so many of them don't pay any taxes at all in many of these smaller countries. It's just a shame.
So is there a way to, and I know my right-wing friends are going to lose their mind for me saying this, but is there a way to hold these multinational companies accountable and have a multinational, you know, a global tax on these companies who, again, they seek out the lowest tax rates, the most exploitable labor laws, the most exploitable environmental laws? Is there a possibility that you could ever hold them to the fire to enforce some bit of sanity on them?
Some. There's sort of two levels of this. One is that some countries have policies about how the company is supposed to report their earnings. And some of that is changing. We have we've agreed on a minimum tax now for corporations here in the United States. That's some actual progress we've made recently. And some of it is people cheating and sort of claiming that all their money is made in some little country somewhere that has lower tax rates. And both of those, I think some progress is being made. There is more progress being made towards transparency, rules to require reporting of these things. I prefer to be optimistic. I'm depressed about so many things in the world.
It's easy to get depressed about so many things.
Yeah, I'm just going to try to be optimistic about this.
Yeah,
more people are aware of it, and I think some progress is being made.
Now, you brought up this 12% number that, you know, the former IRS person was talking about. 12% of people in this country pay no taxes. Do we have a sense of who those 12% of people are and what kind of revenue would be gained from those 12%?
12% of all the taxes due are not paid, is what she said. Not 12% of the people.
Okay.
12% of the money is not paid. And a lot of that is not the very richest people. I don't think Jeff Bezos is cheating on his taxes because he doesn't have any income. He doesn't need to pay much taxes. If you're a billionaire, you don't really need any income.
Truth.
And I don't think poor people are cheating on their taxes because they don't have much income either. I think it's the people in the, the 1% through the 70% area. It's those people near the top who are cheating. And it's not everybody, but some people who have slightly complicated business affairs manage to sort of not report some of their income or have some of their income in a trust or a foreign country or something that's not reported to the Internal Revenue Service, and they just kind of don't bother putting on their tax forms. And there is a lot of cheating. And then, there are some gray areas, like this thing about Microsoft, that maybe they're not sort of hiding it. They're just kind of saying that, we really made all of our money in this small island over here someplace. Sorry, you don't get any taxes.
No, they're just figuring out how to make a loophole in the law.
Yeah.
And this is where my real problem was. And the reason that, from the beginning, I wanted to see Donald Trump's tax returns. I want to see the tax breaks and the loopholes that he uses. Because and he admitted that he uses all of them because he claims he's smart. But I think we as working people need to see, what's been lobbied for and what kind of, loopholes you can drive a truck through to save, billions of dollars in taxes that should be paid to get us health care and education and better roads and bridges. And we can go on for days on the things that we could use the resources for.
Well, take a look at our book, Tax the Rich. I know you've got a copy, Rick. Or look at our website at patrioticmillionaires.org, and you can look on Tax the Rich. And you can see we gave a 20-minute talk exactly on that. The basic answer to what Donald Trump does is pretty simple. Because A, we don't charge taxes on making profits on selling things until you actually get paid. B, we have what's called the 1031 exchange, where if you sell some real estate but buy some other real estate, you don't have to pay any tax on the first one until you sell the second one or the third or the fourth, or and you can go on for the rest of your life. Then we basically have simple policies in place designed so real estate developers don't have to pay taxes. it's not like you need something complicated. You don't need to hire the most expensive accountant or lawyer or something. It's right there. It's very simple. It's that we don't charge taxes on people buying something and then selling the thing later at a higher price at nearly the same rate that we charge taxes on people who get paid an hour, paid a paycheck with hourly wages. Those people pay taxes at a very different rate than people who buy apartments and then sell them. The people that buy and sell real estate have much lower tax rates, and they don't have to pay until they get paid, and they don't have to pay at all if they use their profits on the first deal to invest in the second deal and the third and the fourth, and it can go on forever. And it's not complicated.
No, it's not. And this is where, you know, I come back to, you know, I've had some people complain, you know, that Biden wants to give more money to the IRS and wants more IRS agents. It's just going to mean, you know, that they're going to be snooping in our lives. And I say, no, it's about getting the revenue that we should be coming into our government. But also, I think we do need to look at the tax code and have a major overhaul, because it is rigged against people who work for a living.
Let me also tell you, if you're one of the 1%, and within the 1%, if you're one of the 1% of the 1%, so out of our 100, we have roughly 150 million taxpayers. If you're one of the top few thousand, yes, the IRS is planning to look into your affairs more. Those few thousand richest people in the country, yes, those are the people who are worried. And those are the people going to their congressmen and complaining that it's not fair the IRS can hire expensive lawyers now. That's literally what they're saying.
Yeah.
It's not fair the IRS has money to hire the same kind of smart lawyers that we've been hiring for years.
But here's the thing, and this is where the messaging is filtered down to the people that I know. They say that, you know, the rich are still going to get away with all that they want because they can't afford the really expensive lawyers, and that by Biden hiring these new agents and more agents, it means that, you know, average everyday people are going to be scrutinized even more and harassed and audited and all this more. Because as we found out over the last several years, the people being audited the most are poor people, which is insane because they don't have anything to audit. But, you know, they might get that earned income tax credit, and we can't have any of that.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they've deliberately made the earned income tax credit complicated enough so that people make mistakes. But yeah. The answer to these rich people who have high-priced lawyers is for the people to have high-priced lawyers, too. It's not that complicated. They say that the money they spend on lawyers, they make, in fact, 12 to 1 for people in the 1%, 35 to 1 for people in the top 10th of the 1%.
Wow.
Every dollar they spend on lawyers, when auditing the top 10th of 1%, they get back $35. And in the bottom part of the 1%, they get back $12 for every dollar they spend.
Yeah, last line of questioning I want to get into, because you said the number is 12% here. How bad is it on the rest across the rest of the globe? Did they get into any of that? I mean, is it worse here? Is it better here? What's the sense?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. There are some places that literally don't have very good tax administration at all. I think here we have pretty good compliance among people who work for a living because they get taxes deducted from their paycheck every single week.
Right.
I think we have poor compliance from the very rich because they don't get deductions. They don't get anyone watching over them.
Well, we will see. Morris, as always, good stuff. I appreciate you taking some time sharing some of your thoughts on the big conference, and I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thank you very much, Rick. I'll see you the Thursday after Thanksgiving.
Yes, sir, our good friend Morris Pearl. Make sure you check out their website, patrioticmillionaires.org. We'll get links out on social media how you can do that. Quick break, right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Just got an email during the break from Randy, who, following up on Terry's call earlier, says, you're wrong. You're dead wrong. Wages do increase the costs of building projects. I know, he says. That's the email. I know. And he brought up building projects, which is interesting because it's one of my favorite things to talk about. Because, you know, here in my state, when they were really pushing to do away with prevailing wage, because they said, you know, prevailing wage laws, you know, inflate the cost of labor. They were running around saying that they could literally cut the cost of building projects by 30%. This is what they were saying, that, you know, if they just did away with prevailing wage, they would cut the cost of a new school, a road, whatever. It would cut it by 30%. So, you know, I remember going to my building trades friends and going, you know, is that possible? 30% sounds like a lot because, you know, I got to tell you, it sounds, I don't know, if that's the case, maybe. They sent me the breakdown of a building contract and the labor costs in building a new school is about 25%. The rest of it are architectural fees, the cost of materials, you know, all the stuff that goes into it. 25% of it's actually working people. 25% is actually the person laying the brick and pouring the concrete and doing the work, running the wires and putting the roof on. It's about 25%. So in order to save 30% on a building project like this, the workers would not only have to work for free, they would have to pay 5% of the cost of the project back into the fund because they're only a quarter of the cost of the building. Yet you had people running around with, you know, the disinformation machine saying, you know, we could save 30%. No, you couldn't. What you could do is you could cheat people out of wages. You could have, you know, transient workers coming through, throwing up shoddy work. You could get unskilled people to do jobs that, you know, skilled people would do much better. You could do that. And you might cheat them out of wages, but you're not going to save money. And that's the weird part in where we are. This idea that, you know, if you get a raise, it's automatically going to make things cost more. You know, if we paid fast food workers a living wage, it means, you know, the price of everything's going to go up. When the reality is, for the most part, when prices go up, it's because corporations want more profit. You know, they don't want to lose the importance of their bottom line because the shareholders are sacrosanct. Now, I go back to August 19th, 2019. You may remember Jamie Dimon and the Business Roundtable came out with this edict that, you know, they've learned from their evil ways. You know, for years they had, you know, focused solely on maximizing shareholder wealth. And that's all it was about. It was about, we got to get more profit, got to squeeze the quarter till the eagle screams so that we can, you know, take the last drop of blood out of that eagle and give it off to our billionaire class. They then came out and said, you know, we've learned from the errors of our ways, and we now care. We care about more than just the shareholders. We care about all stakeholders, they said. We care about consumers. We care about communities. And most laughably of all, they claimed they cared about workers and that they were going to help, you know, ensure that workers have the ability to participate in this prosperity. There's all this flowery stuff. And then the pandemic hits and the true reality comes out. And what happened? Well, maximizing shareholder wealth on steroids. So if you want to look at why prices have gone through the roof, it's because they can. It's because corporate America can, because we don't have price controls. There are no more agencies to say you have to petition for rate increases anymore. There's none of that. There's no justifying why they raise the prices. No, they don't have to. They can just do it unilaterally, which is what they did. And what we found out, thanks to Bob Casey in his most recent study, the inflation that happened in the first year after the pandemic, 100% of it was because corporate America said, hey, we can. Because understand, most of the stuff that was sold during the pandemic and there right after was inventory. It didn't cost them any more to make than it did before. They just saw a great opportunity to cash in, to fatten the bottom line. So this argument that they're making of, well, you know, we're paying way too high of wages, and that's what's making the cost of a hamburger go up by 6 cents, is ridiculous. But the simplicity of their argument is important. The simplicity of 1 + 1 = 2, that's easy math. You get more, it's going to cost me more. That's how they sell this. Completely taking them out of the equation. Never mind the fact that the auto workers gave up massive concessions to keep that industry afloat. Never mind the fact that they gave up pensions and all kinds of two-tier wage systems and all kinds of stuff to keep these companies afloat and get them back to profitability. And over the last decade have pocketed $250 billion in profit. That they then go with a massive slap in the face and buy millions of dollars of their shares back. To do what? Maximize shareholder wealth. It's always amazing to me that working people pit themselves against each other. We don't, you know, the Jay Gould quote of, I can pay half the working class to murder the other half. They're not even paying anymore. We're doing it to ourselves. You get a raise, so it's going to hurt me, so you shouldn't get anything. Instead of going, hold on, you got a raise, how do I get one? We used to think like that. There was a generation, and I remember them. They've long since passed, unfortunately. But they used to go, hey, you did better. Hey, how can I do better? You got a new car because you got a raise at work. How do I get a raise at work? Maybe I can get one. And in my mind, still goes this way. I'm not jealous of people doing well. I want people to do well. I just believe that having a billionaire class in this country is bad for business. It's bad for society. It's bad for democracy. It's just bad. Because here's the thing. That is wealth that someone else created that they've figured out how to hoard. And I go back to the example of the big three. $250 billion in profit over the last decade. Wages didn't go up but a couple of pennies. The wealth that those workers were creating through the sweat of their brow, the ache of their back, the destruction of their body, that didn't trickle down to them. And finally they stood up and said, we're not taking it anymore. Finally they said, we're going to shut things down until we get a reasonable deal. And we had a number of auto workers here on the program saying the same things. Look, we sacrificed. We tightened the belt. And understand, the prices of vehicles still went up, didn't they? Wages didn't go up. Healthcare benefits didn't go up. Pensions didn't go up. Prices did. Why?
$250 billion profit over the last decade. Now, look, I'm not against corporations making a profit. Want them to. And you know why I want them to? So that workers can organize and fight for a piece of the pie. So by saying that somehow these workers who create the wealth, demanding part of it is going to raise costs, is just head scratching. But hey, I appreciate the thought. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Right back after this. Stick around.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
CBS News Brief. President Biden and other global leaders at the APEC summit announce a framework to tackle AI issues and, as Mr. Biden explains,
we signed the first of its kind supply chain agreement to help identify supply chain bottlenecks before they become the kind of disruptions we saw during the COVID-19 pandemic.
The jury deadlocks and a mistrial is declared in the federal civil rights trial of a former Louisville police officer who was part of the deadly raid on Breonna Taylor's home. Taylor family attorney Lonita Baker.
Just as the prosecutors intend to retry Brett Hankinson, we intend to be here when that retrial takes place.
New York Congressman George Santos won't run for re-election after the release of a scathing report by the House Ethics Committee. Political analyst Larry Sabato.
This is a big black mark on the Republican Party in general, the Republican Party in New York, and certainly George Santos.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Low unemployment is holding steady in Wisconsin, 3.2% in October compared to 3.1% in September. Department of Workforce Development economist Dennis Winters.
People are getting jobs, they're getting paid well, and hence they're spending that money. And as you know, that's what drives the U.S. economy pretty much.
More than 3 million people are working in non-farm jobs in Wisconsin. That's close to a record. Republican Congressman Mike Gallagher and Tom Tiffany were the only two members of Wisconsin's delegation to vote against a bill to avoid a government shutdown. The bill divides government funding into two portions with new deadlines in January and February. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
And the other fact that can now be confirmed. Reliable source, Mrs. Crudy. Derek Van Orden's staff will offer you a beer, Miller Lights, at least they're not Bud Light, at 10:30 in the morning. DC time on a Thursday.
DC time, that's 9:30 Central, Crudy. That's pretty early.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 till 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Wind advisory continues this evening for gusts 30 to 40 miles an hour. The wind will die down tonight, a clearing sky, a low in the upper 20s. Sunshine cooler in mid-40s tomorrow, but back in the low 50s with sunshine for this weekend, much less wind. It's 46 right now.
OptUS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute. Weekdays from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Local talk about our hometown and all of Wisconsin has gone untapped until now. You're on 93.5 The Tap. Make sure and tell your friends.
Vastly exceeds its price.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I hope everyone got out today and adopted a striker, as we talked about the other night, as the Association of Professional Flight Attendants, you know, the union that represents 26,000 flight attendants across the country at American Airlines. They held an informational picket today all across the country. So I'm hoping if you were near one of those places that you got out. And as we've been saying, if there's a strike near you, adopt a striker. Get out there on the picket line. Walk with them. Talk with them. Hear their stories. You know, bring a couple of bucks for the till. Bring a bottle of water, a pizza, something. But adopt a striker. And because here's the thing. What we know, strikes work, and strikes work better when the community is involved and people come out and say, hey, we support you and we stand with you. And you know what works even better? Not having to strike, but having people believe you're going to. I look at my Teamster brothers and sisters who did really well at UPS under the thought that, you know what, they may go on strike. Someone believed them. But that's why I've asked Caroline Lucas to come talk with us. Caroline is the executive director of a coalition of Kaiser Permanente unions, their website, Union Coalition. You may remember you had some 85,000 workers there at Kaiser Permanente, one of the largest healthcare systems in this country, walk out over a staffing thing. And again, back to where we started. I love union nurses. Caroline, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you so much, Rick, for inviting me. What a pleasure.
So let's talk about your action. I mean, 85,000 workers won an incredible contract because they stood up and said, we're not going to take it anymore. How'd you do that?
You know, Rick, what was sticking in my mind was all of the patients that came out as well, to your point about adopt a striker. We would get asked a lot by the corporate press, well, isn't this going to hurt patients? And what floored me was the outpouring of support from patients who appreciate their union nurses, who appreciate the folks cleaning their hospital rooms, and said, we're here with you. We see how hard you're working. We know you're advocating for us, and we've got your back.
So, yeah, I got to tell you, it was one of those things. You know, we had listeners who actually went out and participated because of our Adopt a Striker call. And they went out there and heard from the nurses, but more importantly, the nurses heard from them. And it's that kind of relationship that I think is so important if we're going to save this healthcare system, which seems to me, and you can correct me if you think I'm wrong, that is just predicated on how much we can squeeze the eagle, the quarter till the eagle screams for the profiteers to grab every drop of blood out of it.
I don't disagree. So many of our healthcare systems really are making decisions for what makes them money versus what cures people and saves people's lives. So needing to remind, you know, the healthcare executives, our folks aren't, you know, making widgets. They're saving people's lives and they're providing healthcare. And so we really need you to treat them with the same respect that they show up and treat patients with every single day.
Yeah. And we need healthcare professionals who, you know, aren't worried about, hey, how are we going to pay the rent? How am I going to keep the lights on? Hey, if I get sick, how am I going to take care of myself? We need people who are going to focus on the job and taking care of people. And you guys won some really great things in your contract, a $24 minimum wage across the country, $25 in California. That's kind of a big freaking deal.
It is. It's the first healthcare worker minimum wage that a healthcare giant has set across the country. It was a huge deal. To your point, we would hear stories regularly from our frontline healthcare providers who were sleeping in their cars because they were working in places like Los Angeles and couldn't afford on their salaries to rent a place nearby. So life-changing, not just for our healthcare providers and the frontline healthcare workers in our union, but they're for their families, for the generations coming behind them who will have better living because their parents have union jobs that are paying respectful wages.
You know, I started today's show off talking about a story that grabbed my attention by the folks over at STAT. They did an investigative report of United Health. And what they found is, you know, they have this algorithm that determines how much, you know, care an elderly patient's going to get because they're literally trying to squeeze every dime out of the privatized Medicare system. And, you know, it's just disgraceful when you look at that the profits come before the health of our most vulnerable, especially that's the part that bothers me the most. If it were some billionaire who could afford to pay for it out of their pocket, I go, okay, I get that. But you're talking about the most vulnerable people in their most vulnerable moments.
and denying them access to care, to me, is just despicable, which, again, I come back to. Having union nurses, having people who taking care of their patients is first, front and foremost, the primary goal and responsibility, and not worried about, hey, am I going to get terminated? Am I going to get in trouble? But taking care of people, I got to tell you, that's, for me, that's just what has to be.
Rick, you're so right. And you know, all the research supports that union hospitals deliver better outcomes for patients. I think it's because of what you said, that people aren't afraid to speak up and advocate for their patients, to, you know, speak truth to power when they see the wrong things happening for the wrong reasons. And also because when you're in a union facility and you have a job where you can afford to pay your bills, you stay. And so you have consistency. You have people who have been in their community with these same group of patients for 10, 15, 20 years and are able to say, hey, Rick, I saw you last week and you don't look as great this week as last week. What's going on? What's happening? They're really invested in their patients and their community. So totally appreciate what you're saying and agree.
No, what the article said is it said, quote, former employees said missing the target and they had a 1% target of their algorithm, which, you know, which meant that if they went above 1%, they opened themselves up for discipline. It said former employees said missing the target for patients under their watch meant exposing themselves to discipline, including possible termination, regardless of whether the additional days were justified, whether it was right or not. It didn't matter. You still went over the goal. And that, to me, is disgraceful.
Yep. It makes me think about all the regulations you see coming down from hospital corporations, limiting the amount of time you can spend in rooms with patients, right? The issue is get more people through faster and faster, not give people the time they need to really do a diagnostic test. One of the things that stuck in my mind was talking to folks in mammography down in San Diego who were saying they used to do 7 biopsies a day. And now we're being scheduled for 14 to 16. Same person, one person, but being asked to see twice as many patients with appointments that were shorter, right? So these high quotas that just don't focus on what the patient needs, but focuses on what the company needs. That's what we're fighting against.
And again, you know, as we consolidate in these big conglomerates, and it's all over the country. I mean, there's no more small community hospitals. There are no more, you know, small town, you know, I used to have a doctor that, you know, had, you know, one or two other physicians. It was a small office, now taken up by a huge chain. And the care has, in my view, has diminished badly. And everybody I talk to who's my age is kind of feeling the same thing. The healthcare system has changed in really bad ways. And how do we reclaim that? I mean, look, I love the fact that you got better staffing levels and fought for that. And we need to be doing more of that. But how do we reclaim some of this?
It's about taking back the moral high ground. That's what makes me so proud of being part of this moment we're in now, where I see workers, not just in healthcare, which is critical, but everywhere from Starbucks. I'm in California. Our scientists, our state scientists, just went on strike for the first time ever because they say science matters, right? And so frontline workers, period, who are owning their worth and who are saying, we can't continue to be squeezed. We can't continue to be making you money while we can't pay our bills. You know, we have workers who are doing everything right. They're going into industries that we need people in. But if one thing goes wrong in their life, they're out in the streets. There's no safety. There's no margin for error. It's unsustainable.
No, you're spot on right. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Caroline Lucas. She's the executive director of the Coalition of Kaiser Permanente Unions. You can check out their website, unioncoalition.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at the work that they're doing. You know, this is, you know, for me, and we've talked to a lot of nurses over the years who have had to strike, and a lot of nurses who have organized over the years. Are you seeing more people, given the fact that we're coming out of the pandemic where they were told they were heroes and essential and all of that garbage? Do you see more people in healthcare saying, we really need to join together? We really need to unionize, if not for better wages, hours, conditions for ourselves, but for safety for patients. Are we seeing more?
We are. And while we were on strike, we got letters not just from people who are interested in unionizing, but other folks like in New Jersey. The USW nurses there have been out for 9 weeks, I think, so far on strike. So there's this moment where non-union workers, non-union healthcare workers are saying, man, we need a union to really protect us and to help us deliver the best care possible. And union workers are also saying, gosh, we are ready to take the ultimate action of going on strike. If our voices can't be heard any other way, you'll hear us in the streets. And so it really is a historic moment, and it's a real shot in the arm for unions and workers all over, because when union workers raise the standards, other non-union hospitals or employers are forced to follow to be competitive.
You know, nobody wants to go on strike. And I say this every time. I've been on strike throughout my life. Nobody wants to do it. Sometimes you have to. It's the last arrow in the quiver. And what's always amazing to me, and maybe you can talk to this a little bit, is that, you know, sometimes employers kind of force you into it. And the weird thing is it usually ends up costing them a lot more than had they just agreed to the union's reasonable demands. And I look at the one, you know, the one hospital, I think it was in Massachusetts, I think it was St. Vincent's, where had you given the workers what they wanted, it cost like $5 million. They spent $10 million to fight the workers. And it just seems like it's more about power and control than it is about running a hospital and taking care of patients. I'm curious your thoughts.
I mean, two things. I would say that they were paying the scabs who were coming in, registry workers coming in, $65 an hour for jobs that our folks make $25 an hour to cover, right, to do regularly. So the amount of money they're willing to pay strike breakers was disgusting. And it's just the wrong priorities and the wrong message. So that's number one. But number two, what scares the pants out of me, Rick, is that when we had smaller health systems, that was true. The cost of a strike was concerning enough that would give them pause to do the right thing. But now Kaiser's making $100 million a year. Right. So when you go on strike, let's say I think our strike probably cost them upwards of $30-40 million. But if you're making $100 million a year, that's a drop in the bucket. Right. So you're able to weather these huge strikes much more effectively than when you were having less resources at your disposal. And so to your point about the hospital consolidations, that's what terrifies me is I'm sorry, I said $100 million. They're making $1 billion this year. I apologize for the mistake. That many zeros, you start getting fuzzy, right? A nonprofit health system on track to clear $1 billion, right? So you lose $40 million in a strike, and you're kind of like, I just changed my couch cushions, right?
Yeah, anymore, I'm out of fingers.
Yeah, it's a lot of fingers and toes, right? You no longer has the same kind of deterrent impact when you're speaking with that level of financial clout.
Now, you say $1 billion they're going to make in profit. They're a nonprofit, right?
Yes. Yes, they're a nonprofit who made money during the course of the pandemic. So we bargained with them in 2019, and they told us in 2019, gosh, we don't have much money, we're broke. They had tens of billions of dollars in reserves at that point. They doubled their net worth over the course of 4 years during the worst pandemic we've seen in any of our lifetimes, and came to us this year and again said, oh gosh, we're really struggling, we don't have money. So I was making jokes. I want to be broke like Kaiser's broke with $65 billion in reserves. I want to be that kind of broke.
Yeah, I want to be that kind of broke too. How do I do that? Oh yeah, start a nonprofit healthcare.
Sign me up.
It's just, it really is quite remarkable if you think about it. So last line of questioning I've got for you, because you know this fight never ends. The insatiable appetite for more from our corporateers never seems to end. I think it was the CEO of Caterpillar a number of years ago who, when asked, you know, how much is enough, said it's never enough. I always want more. I always want that next quarter. Mm-hmm. So if I can, you know, cheat a worker out of a quarter, I'm going to do that. What is the next fight coming up?
You know, the next fight coming up is to hold this giant to its promises. Right? It's one thing to get a contract and a piece of paper, but unless people live up to those commitments, and we see this all the time with, you know, the National Labor Relations Board getting disputes and arbitrations because, you know, corporations break the law. They break the law, you know, flagrantly. So our contract frequently also gets broken. And so how do you hold people accountable? Because the best agreement is only worth paper if it's not enforced. So keeping workers with their eye on the prize of not just getting the agreement, but having a living agreement, right? Seeing those things come into play. reaching out and building solidarity with our brothers and sisters, both union and non-union, who are fighting the same fight, who are facing the same kind of corporate giants in healthcare, who are being squeezed, as you put it. And then I will say for Kaiser that their premise, their mission when they started, really was pretty visionary, and they have revolutionized healthcare in the concept of a one-stop insurance and healthcare provider focused on preventative care. And so I always say, you know, your union is supposed to be your partner appealing to your better half, right? If you are a nonprofit, your union workforce should be the ones that remind you of that and say, you are here for the patient. You are here for the patient, because somebody has to speak for the patient. The dollars speak for themselves, right? And so reminding Kaiser bosses that's not enough just to say the right thing. You got to walk that talk. So holding folks honest for the next 4 years while we build this labor movement, while we build our communities, is that's a lot of work. And we're looking forward to diving in on it.
Well, good on you. Good on the success you've had thus far. Good on your members for saying enough is enough. And I wish you guys the best. I hope you'll come back and share some more thoughts down the road as you continue to organize our hospitals and make sure that patients at least get a fair shake.
Would love to. And Rick, hats off to you for the work that you do and for allowing, you know, average people this platform to amplify their voices. Really just kudos.
Thanks so much, Caroline. Appreciate the time.
Thank you. Have a good night.
I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Remember, check out the website, unioncoalition.org. You'll get some information there. Right back. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1798. That was the day Kentucky became the first state to nullify an act of the United States Congress. The federal government had passed the Alien and Sedition Acts during the presidency of John Adams. These laws were passed as a reaction to the French Revolution and an undeclared naval war with France. These acts had several consequences. They increased the residency requirement for American citizenship from 5 years to 14. They allowed the president to imprison or deport immigrants considered to be dangerous to the peace and safety of the United States. And they effectively limited speech, which was critical of the federal government. Kentucky argued that states had the right to declare unconstitutional any acts of Congress that were not authorized by the Constitution. There was much uproar by other states due to Kentucky's nullification stance. These two acts were eventually allowed to expire a few years later in 1800 and 1801, but they were the forerunner for later federal laws that would be wielded against the labor movement. The Espionage and Sedition Acts, which were passed in 1917 and 1918 during the U.S. involvement in World War I, echoed much of the same spirit of the earlier acts. Under these new laws, in July 1917, nearly 1,200 strikers at the Phelps Dodge Copper Mine in Arizona, many of them of Mexican descent, were loaded onto railroad cattle cars without food or water and left in the New Mexico desert. In September that same year, the Justice Department staged massive raids on the Industrial Workers of the World offices, arresting 169 union leaders. In 1918, labor leader Eugene V. Debs was in prison for opposing the United States' entry into World War I. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, therickssmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. You know, I got to tell you, you look at the victory that they had out there on across the, well, actually, I keep saying out there like it's California, but it's really all across the country. Kaiser Permanente is a huge corporation, 85,000 workers. And, you know, I see this a lot in our neck of the woods. You've got nonprofit systems that are the insurer and the hospital. You know, this was the model. And look, it is visionary, saying, look, you know, come on with us and you'll get the care that you need. But the problem is
that mission often falls down when it comes down to counting the dollars. And that's where I struggle, because, you know, even here, you know, you've got just so much hoarding. I guess that's the only word I can come up with. Sad reality. Also sad reality, it's being reported by Axios that a third of the newspapers that we have right now will be gone next year. They report that the decline of local newspapers accelerated so rapidly in 2023 that they now believe we'll have lost a third of newspapers as of 2005 by the end of next year, rather than 2025 as originally predicted. You stop and you think about local news. You stop and think about, you know, I remember the local newspapers that had local reporters that actually covered things in your community. Those are mostly gone because they're labor intensive. There's not a lot of money to be made in them now, but they are, I believe, an important need. And we're in a moment where the moneyed interests, and I keep coming back to this because it's part of the reason that we're no longer doing live radio, is it comes down to funding. It comes down to the fact that the billionaires are funding massively their message. It's the reality. The right has funded their message massively. And anything else gets drowned out. Now, I started this program 18 years ago with the thought that you got to balance the airwaves. Nobody's absolutely right. Nobody's absolutely wrong. I started it naively, believing that we could start a debate and a discussion where better ideas would come forth. And what I've watched over the last 18 years is the right wing has grown much more powerful. Their message has gotten much crazier. And the country has gone to an extreme that 18 years ago, if you'd have told me that's where we'd have headed, I probably wouldn't have started this. I naively believed that you could have an honest discussion. And what I learned over the time that I've been doing this is the moneyed interests get what they want. And working people always get the short end of the stick. And my frustration has been that even when you talk to working people about, hey, that's a billionaire-funded front group that is pushing their agenda. Think anything coming out of the State Policy Network. Here in my state, the Commonwealth Foundation. Think of any of the think tanks that are in you know, states across this country, because there's at least one in every state funded by billionaires, by the Koch brothers and their ilk, the American for Prosperities and all of those groups. You know, when the Tea Party was running around, funded by billionaires. And you go, when do working people get their message heard? You know, a lot of the healthcare stuff. When you hear people talking about Medicare for all, saying, look, we need to have a single payer system. We have one big giant pool and have some say through our legislature, through our government on who can be denied, what can be denied, and be transparent about it. The insurance industry loses their mind and lobbies like crazy to get, you know, their machine working. And the right-wing spin machine takes all of the focus group-tested, think-tank-approved messaging, and they blare it out. And they've got really compelling stories why we can't have a single-payer system, why we can't ensure that granny gets the care that she needs, why this algorithm that United Health is using is necessary to keep down costs. And the buzzword being necessary to keep down costs, not the fact that granny's going to die earlier. And I go back to my grandmother. She died sooner than she had to. But we have a system that never gave her a chance. and as her, you know, one of her only advocates, I carry that responsibility that I didn't do enough because I believed the system. This is why we need to have much more oversight, why we need to have advocate nurses who are going to, who are willing to stand up and say, no, we can do better. And why we need better politicians. So when we think about voting next time around, think about what really matters, what issues really matter, and not what hat we're wearing. What policies they bring, what ideas they bring that are going to make our lives better. That's my hope. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. If you don't, if you don't subscribe, subscribe. Simple. It'll always be there. Appreciate you tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W22 AD Eau Claire, and streaming.